Hello, everybody. from long distance California said, I'll have 9 years tomorrow, and it is truly thankful to Austin Recovery and this program that I am in the position that I am in today with a good, healthy, positive life. My addiction kind of started late in life. I mean, I had a rough childhood. I had a very abusive father. My parents were divorced before I was one. My mom was married 4 times and my dad was married 3 times. So never had a stable family, environment. Trisha is my oldest half sister, but, she has been one of my biggest supporters besides my mom that just got online from what I understand. So hopefully she can listen too. In my teens and 20s, I was very anti-drug because I grew up with alcoholics and alcohol and drug addicts all my life and knew that it was a bad thing. It wasn't until my 30s that I thought, well, what's this big ecstasy thing, you know? And I wanted to try it. And that was the beginning of the end. I say the beginning of the end because within 12 years, when I moved to Houston, I owned let's back up. I always get nervous at this, Chris. I've been a hairdresser for over 30 years. And it was a great career. I'm done with it. I've been very successful at that. I had many salons and moved. In 1998, I decided that I needed to get out of Austin. Things weren't going good. I'd broken my hand. My business was failing. So I decided I was going to move to Houston with my partner at the time. And 6 months after I got there, he decided he didn't want to be in a relationship anymore. So therefore I was on my own. I had to sit there and figure out what was my next step in life. Did I go run back to Austin where it was safe, or did I go and try to make it on my own in Houston? So I decided to stay in Houston, and, I ended up being very successful in Houston until I picked up the ecstasy and methamphetamine habit. Today, I choose not to do anything at all because of the fact is I know if I take a drink, I could possibly use. But I had one of the most popular salons in Houston on Montrose Boulevard, right across from the gay Mecca and the gay bars and everything. So I was very popular with doing all the queen's hair. and that was very successful for about 4 years. And then the meth use got so bad that, I totaled 3 cars. Then I had another car that was stolen and, had $5,000 worth of shears and scissors and clippers stolen. And, you know, couldn't work because I didn't have anything to cut hair with. Nervous breakdown. My first really, really big consequences was when I was driving from Austin back to Houston with 16 tablets, an 8-ball, 2 shots of G, and that was all in my car. And the cops pulled me over. I was doing 110 down I-10. And so they took me in, searched my car, basically took if it was valuable money, drugs, everything. They took it out of my car. I got 7 years probation for that. Then about a year later, it was a little over a year. I relapsed and got busted in my salon in downtown Houston by across the street from all the gay bars. So imagine a little tiny 2-story building with 10 cop cars, unmarked and marked, in front of my six parking spaces is all we had in our in my building, and they were all there to bust little old me. That they took me in. I ended up, I was going to fight it because the cop never saw me with the drugs. He found them on the ground. Now we all know where they came from and where they went. Who's the one that threw them on the ground? But my mom, and I love her to death, and I'm glad she helped me make this decision of just taking a plea bargain. I took a 3-year plea bargain, went back to Columbus, Colorado County, to wait sentencing on that. And I got a 5-year sentence for that one. And I ended up totally spending in prison this time. In prison, I actually went to prison. I spent 18 months total between prison and county jail. A little over, almost 2 years. Got out, went back to Houston. One salon hired me, and I thought, okay, I got a chance to build myself. But of course, I went to hang around the same people that I always hung around with before I got arrested. And ended up losing that job, and ended up losing my apartment, my car. Somebody, I totaled my car. I wrecked my car. Some idiot ran a red light and smashed the whole passenger side in, and somebody stole that car. They never found that car. To this day, they cannot find that car. Called my mom, and, you know, I was just going to touch base with her, let her know that I'm still alive, because I hadn't talked to her in a couple, you know, in a while. And she goes, and she was just like, you know, telling her everything that was going on. She says, well, come home. And I says, Mom, I can't come home. I have no way home. I have no money. I was working at IHOP to make enough money each day to live in a hotel room. And it wasn't the Ritz-Carlton or any, the W or anything like that. It was the worst of the worst hotels, just so that I had a bed to sleep in. And she said, fine. She called my adopted father, Stephen, and my grandmother, her mother, and said, okay, we've got you a car. You get on bus, come and get your car. So I got my car and started moving everything into storage. And it was a 97 Grand Am, 2-door. And I had a queen size sleigh bed strapped to the hood, to the roof. Headboard frame, mattress box spring, going down Highway 59 to put it in storage. That's how my brain was working at that time. Still was working at IHOP, trying to get my parole transferred to Austin. They kept messing up the paperwork. So my mom finally said, okay, you're coming home. You'll just drive and meet your parole officer every week. And that's what I did for 6 months, or for 3 months almost. Is drive back and forth to Austin and Houston every day or every week. Got to Austin, was doing great. Ended up getting a job because I, you know, in Houston, I had tarnished my name so bad that I couldn't get a job in Supercuts, much less a good high end salon that I was like I was used to working in. And it was really hard for me to get a job in Austin right off the bat too, because, you know, your background kind of carries around with you, especially if you've worked for corporate salons as long as I have. So I ended up getting a job at a place that I probably shouldn't have, known for drugs and all kinds of stuff, but I needed a job to make money. And so I worked overnights at what they call Midtown Spa, which was a bathhouse for the gay community, and ended up relapsing really bad. Almost got busted on the way home one night. I have a really bad problem, and my sister can test for this. I have a lead footitis. I speed everywhere I go. I drive really fast. All of my friends do not like riding with me. But it was... And I still, you know, I didn't get caught. I got pulled over. He didn't search my car. He let me go. He said, oh, good. It sounds like you're really trying. When in fact, I had a gram sitting in my briefcase in my car. But because I was being so honest and nice, he thought, okay, we'll just let this guy go. He's trying. And then I finally got a salon job and was doing really good. I ended up moving out of my grandmother's house because at this time I had already relapsed. I was using, but I didn't want. I still respected my grandmother and my mother, and I did not want to use in their house. So whether I was ready to move out or not, I was moving out because I did not want to bring that into my family's home. And I went back and forth for a long time. Let's see. And that was in 2006 that I moved back to Austin. And in 2008, I got a really good job, an opportunity to become a manager for TGF hair salons. And they were going to give me one of the biggest stores, but they said, you know, you haven't really managed or done salon work in about a year or so. You know, I've been behind the chair, but I haven't managed. So they wanted to see if I could manage a store before they put me in the big store. I ran that store for 3 years, brought it up to, you know, making $20,000 a month. And December, I think, was the December before I got the promotion to the big store, I did $25,000 and I'm getting all kinds of praise. But my addiction hadn't really kicked in my relapse hadn't kicked in full gear. It wasn't until I got the big store and I took my staff's break room away so that I would have an office to hide in. They always think, you know, one of the biggest excuses I used was that they couldn't keep it clean. So I'm going to take the break room and turn it into my office. And I used to sit there and smoke meth in my office while everybody else was on the floor working. My sister's hearing some of this stuff for the first time. and then about 2011, you know, 2011, I couldn't do it anymore. Me and my partner at the time were getting in fights all the time. The cops were being called on us because domestic violence. Thank God I never got an actual conviction or arrest but it was mainly on his half, you know, on his part of the abuse. So in 2011, I decided that, I needed to change and, talk to my integral care case manager. And I told him, I says, I need help. I need to go to treatment. And they said, well, there's this great place where there's this place called Austin Recovery. They have 3 campuses and they've been doing this for years and they're nonprofit. I said, okay, because I can't afford to pay for it. So I went to what they call, I went and, you know, left my house in North Austin on October 2nd, I think it was October 2nd or 3rd, somewhere around there. And, got in my truck, did the last bit of drugs that I had. Cause you know, I was not going to go to treatment, not high. I just wasn't going to do that. So I drove over to Cross Park, sat in the parking lot for a little bit, got out of the truck, locked it and walked in the doors of Austin Recovery. I had, you know, I can't sit still normally. I'm ADHD. I'm hyperactive. I can't sit still to begin with. And then on top of that, I was high on meth. So I kept jumping from chair to chair and talking to anybody and everybody that would talk to me. So I'd have something to do. And finally they checked me in. It was an all day affair back then. It was just, and this guy, I'll never forget, this old Spanish Mexican dude named Roberto with his little hat comes up to take us to our prospective campuses. And so we get in this big old white van, and so I thought I was going to go to Cross Park, and they said, no, you're going over here. So they put me in the van with a bunch of other people, and we went over to what they called the lodge at the time. And the first, I would say the first week to week and a half to almost 2 weeks, I cussed everybody out. I was mad. I was horrible. I was horrible to the staff. And that's one of the reasons why whenever I worked at Austin Recovery, I understood where the people, clients were coming from when they were mad and they were upset and they had to take it out on somebody. And, you know, it's sad that we took it out on the staff. So finally, you know, they got tired of me going to the meetings, to classes late. Yes, everybody, I was at the classes late every week or every day. Okay. Even though I'd made sure y'all were on time, I was always late. So they put me what they called a roll caller. So in other words, I had to be to every meeting before everybody else so that I could call roll. And, you know, Kenny Pope and Will Miley and all those people that were at the lodge. Really saved my life. It really helped me. Even though I did not stay sober after that stint to Austin Recovery. I got out and so my out date was November 1st. What's October 31st? Halloween. So I asked if I could get out on October 31st so I could celebrate Halloween. My counselor looked me dead in the face and said, "Hell no. You're going to stay until your very last day. We are not letting you out on a holiday." So my mom picked me up. Of course, she was late as always. and she only lived like a mile down the street from the treatment center. I got out and I stayed clean until January 1st or December 30, the last day of December, the first part of January, when I found out that mine and my sister Trisha's grandmother was sick. They call her Grammy. I was the only one for some reason that could call her grandmother. and my partner at the time was supposed to go to treatment. He didn't. And he was accusing me of using, and I really wasn't. I was really trying hard not to. And then when I got the news about my grandmother, I just said, screw it. Screw it. And went in and got high before I got even got on the plane to California. I was so good at sneaking out. My biological mother, my older sister, and everybody that was at the house did not even know that I was sneaking out nightly and then sneaking back into the house. That's how good I got at sneaking in and out of the house. To the kid that used to get caught every time he did anything wrong, I had learned to sneak out of the house. Trish knew something was up. Trish has been down that road herself before. And she kind of guided me. Even though she knew she couldn't say or do anything, she kind of, after I got home, she guided me in the right direction. But, you know, as much as she wanted to and everybody wanted me to stay sober, I just couldn't because they wanted me to. I have a twin sister that was abused by our father as much, more than I was abused. And I had a breakdown one time when I visited her due to this. Because a lot of my addiction came around my father. The things that I wanted to make go away came around my father. And I couldn't protect my sister from him. And I thought it was my job to protect my sister from him. And it wasn't. And that's something I've worked out with therapy and my counselors at Austin Recovery and my family. I used to say I hated my father. I hated him. I hated him. And my mother, Carol, just said one day, she says, Dennis, I really wish you would stop saying that. You do not hate your father. You don't love him. You don't like him. You love him with all your heart because he's your father. You just don't like him. You don't like the person he is. And, you know, that says a lot. That said a lot. And then one time I got arrested and I asked her, why, if God loves me, why am I going through all of this? Why am I gay? Why am I doing this? And she goes, Dennis, you need to stop worrying about everybody else and everything else. Do what God says about those 10 commandments and he'll take care of everything else. And that was the beginning. And those two sayings from her was the beginning of me going, okay, but I still wasn't ready. Nine months to the day that I relapsed. Actually 7 to 8 months time. I relapsed. I got arrested for the third time. Mind you, I'd finished my parole. I was off paper. I'd been doing good, except, you know, I hid it very well that my drug use. I come to find out later, my mom already knew. She just, you know, I got arrested. And when I went to court, they told me, you can get 25 to life. This is your fourth drug felony. We can enhance it to habitual. Now, I already knew what that meant because I have two brothers that are locked up in prison and they're going to be there for a while because of things that they did. And I already spent 18 months and I knew I didn't want to go back. So I, you know, everybody says court appointed attorneys are crap. They don't care. I had one of the best court appointed attorneys. I walked in the court one day and he goes, you know, they can test you at any time. And I said, really? He goes, yes, they can test you. So, you know, that gave me food for thought, you know, okay, all I can use, I just can't go to court. Hi. About 2 weeks later in September, I was having a really strange day. We were getting high. At this time I had already lost. I totaled my car. I lost the manager. I almost lost the manager's job. I still had it. I lost my place to live. I was living in a room about the size of my bedroom with my ex that also was my dealer and three dogs. And my three dogs lived in a 2x3 kennel most of the day because my friend didn't want them running around the house. I just got finished doing a big shot and I felt really weird. So I looked across the room where my dogs were and they were all three looking at me. And I don't know what happened, but I curled up and went to sleep in the fetal position that night. And the next day I got up and went to work. Didn't talk to hardly anybody. And, you know, that's kind of hard to do when you're running a business, but I did what I needed to do. I got back home. I looked at my ex and told him I'm done. And he goes, are you sure? I said, yes, I'm absolutely done. I cannot do this anymore. And I poured everything that was in my briefcase, syringes, pipes, the whole nine yards, and then walked away. And thank God a room next door came available. I took that room. I lived in there for a month. I bought a 1989 BMW with the whole front end crashed. The grill was missing. I had to tie the hood down. And I moved out to Manor, Texas for the first year of my sobriety. I drove that car back and forth. That was the best car, ugliest car, but the best car I had in a very long time, because, you know, it was paid for. It was mine and nobody could take it away from me ever again. And I drove it. I've never driven another car high again after that September 20th of 2012. I lived out in Maynard for a year, you know, going to meetings, being part of different communities. Between January and September, I was still involved, believe it or not, with the alumni. I've actually showed up to Austin Recovery alumni several times high in that time. But, you know, all those people were always there. Oh, my mom just sent me an email, a text message saying, "I thought I told you to get sober." Well, yes, she did, and she wouldn't talk to me. So in that January to September, between me getting arrested, my mom telling me that she never wanted to see me again, and Trish just not calling me as often and not wanting to be involved, because I was not I thought I was the nicest person as I could possibly, you know, as always. And I found out that when I was high, I was an ass. I would give you the world, but I expected the world and a half back. And so it was a big combination of a bunch of things. I decided that I had to get sober. And the case was dropped after about 6 months of me being sober. They couldn't indict me. So my attorney said, "Well, we're going to go ahead and have the case dropped." And he went to the district attorney and said, "Hey, you know, y'all can't indict him. It's been almost 8-9 months. We're moving to discharge the case." And the DA goes, "Well, we'll go ahead and do that. But if the lab reports come back, we reserve the right to take you back to court or to arrest you." And I'm like, "I don't care. I just want to leave today." You know, I just want to go home and be a free person. And also I worked for Austin Recovery for 5 years. On my second year of sobriety, I got a job at the wonderful place, Austin Recovery. They taught me a lot. Thank you, Chris, for keeping me in line sometimes when I couldn't, when I was being squirrely. I can guarantee you I've done about 100 miles around that campus a year. Right, Chris? because the clients meant the world to me. I started out as overnight staff. I moved up to morning staff. I moved into transportation. And then I ended up being a case manager for the Family House program, the last program to leave Austin Recovery. It was sad that I left a year ago, May 8th of 2020. I left when they first started thinking they were going to go downhill or close, and they were really struggling to keep it open. And I was glad to see that they kept it open for as long as they did. But it's sad that it has to close its doors, and it can't help any more people. Let's see, 2018, I bought my first house. 2020 was an amazing year. I got to foster a little boy. It was an amazing experience. And these are things that I would never have done had I been using. I get to go outside every day and get into my brand new truck. Well, it's not brand new anymore. It's 2 years old almost. But I get to go in and go to and do things that I could never done sober. I mean, high, excuse me. Can't do anything high. I'm going to miss Austin Recovery, and I hope we can make this alumni stick together and stay together and do amazing things through the recovery of and the Alumni Association. Thank you so much, Chris, for letting me do this. And I hope everybody has an amazing life and that we can all stay in touch in some way or another. Thank you.
Dennis, that was amazing.
Thanks, Dennis.
That good?
That's awesome, man. Thanks, Dennis.
Good to see you.
Yeah, Dennis, that was a really great story. Thank you.
How am I going, guys?
Thanks, Dennis.
Say hi, Dennis.
Bye, guys. Thank you, Chris.
Oh, my goodness.